Welcome, citizens. You're listening to New Amsterdam Radio, the podcast for creatives. Here, thinkers and doers always have a key to the city. The mayor is in, so office hours start now.
Citizens, it's another edition of New Amsterdam Radio podcast for creatives, newamsterdam.com, presented by SeatGeek. Get yourself $20 off. We're checking out shows all around town using promo code FLOBITO. That's FLOBITO for SeatGeek. Yeah, make sure it happens. What's going on, citizens? It's Mary here, making sure we are wrapping up season 10 pretty strong. And we have a fantastic guest with Kelly Sparta, who is into woo-woo energetics. In fact, that was something that took me aback so much, I had to make it the title of this week's episode. What does that mean? What does it mean to be spiritual? Am I spiritual? Am I not spiritual enough? What do creatives and entrepreneurs can use about tapping into their spirituality? These are all things I want to discuss with Kelly about. In the meantime, I know you're working on things. Is 2024 working out for you? I've been reading some things about inflation and what that means, how it's harder for new businesses to launch. Let me know how you live it. Let me know how you are making through. I would love to hear your stories. You can hit me up personally at Flobo Boys on that X and that Blue Sky, or at New Amsterdam on that Instagram. Just say, what's up? I'm working on this. Let me know what you think. I would love to chime in with my own opinions about things. As for me, I'm good. You can probably see my face over the Black Baseball mixtape. My side project, the new one, justthesandwich.com, the sports comedy blog, is moving and shaking. So a lot of things are coming down the pipe. With that further ado, it's my chat with Kelly Sparta after the jump. Welcome back to New Amsterdam Radio, the podcast for creatives. It is I, the mayor, Flobo Boys, in the mayor's office. Hang with people who are doing the dang thing. And you know what? I don't know, we have over 200 episodes of this podcast, and everyone's always like, Flobito, you're so logical. Show me some of your spirit. Well, how about we do that right here today? Please welcome my guest, Kelly Sparta, to the show. Kelly, how's it going?
It's going good. How are you?
Fantastic. You know, it's kind of cool that we're rolling into 2024. Are we out of the pandemic, in a pandemic? Who knows? But I'm living.
Yeah, I was going to say, I have no idea. Nobody tells me anything.
Exactly. It's kind of like, what's going on? But no, I'm doing fantastic. I also have been a huge fan, a recent fan of your work. So it's kind of cool to see you are doing fantastic release at distance, right?
I didn't hear the last two words of that. It's kind
you're
of
doing, you're doing you're doing fantastic, at least from my vantage point. At least from
It's awesome. I mean, things are taking off in really lovely ways. You know, I'm about to be that overnight sensation that took 20 years to get there. So that'll be fun, right?
Yeah. One of the cool things I came across in describing what you do, or even your media kit, was that you are into woo-hoo energetics. And I was like, I need to know off the rip, what does that actually mean to someone who be initiated to that phrase?
All right. So woo-woo is sort of like, you know, anything that's in the spiritual realm. That's usually what people say, oh, you're into that woo-woo stuff, right? It's like, I'm grounded woo. Okay. So I take the woo-woo world and I bring it into practical application in the real world. So yeah. I work with people who are having spiritual awakenings and who are suddenly realizing that, oh, I'm seeing ghosts, or I'm having prophetic dreams, or I suddenly can hear my guides talking to me. I hope it's my guides and that I'm not going crazy. You know, all of these things, people wake up and they're just like, I don't know what to do with this. And right. So I help them orient and then figure out how to turn it into a practical benefit. Most of my people are empaths, so they feel what other people feel. They get run over by other people's strong emotions, and they have terrible boundaries, and they have a hard time setting shields. So like they'll do research on the internet. All my people go straight into this, like, absolute, I have to learn how to orient to my life, right? Yeah. Because I don't know what this world is, and I'm desperately scared that I'm going to get screwed up by it. So let me go figure it all out. And so they go into this massive downloading of information into their brains. They've got like a pile of books on the edge of their bed that's half, all of them are half read, you know, they've got 50 podcasts queued. They've got, you know, 60 YouTube videos they've watched in the last week. You know, I get people calling me up saying, okay, I found your podcast last week and I've listened to the first 40 episodes.
Whoa.
And I'm like, that's like in a week? Did you sleep? You know, like, what? Yeah. But this is the level that they get to, right? Is they're just in this download because they're trying desperately to orient, because they all come from childhoods that were less than optimal, we'll say.
Sure.
And so, you know, safety is a huge issue. And if you don't know what you're doing and you don't understand the world you're operating in, then you feel very unsafe. And so a lot of the work that I do with people is first getting them oriented and then getting them set up to be safe in working in that environment so that they can then start to actually make use of what it is that they've been given as gifts.
Well, it makes sense that people would reach out to you because it said you have over 50 years of experience in this field.
Almost.
50.
Almost. Don't make me older than I am. I'm only 54.
No, we're all in the same age.
My mother started me in this when I was 5 years old. She said I was talking to ghosts in my crib.
Yeah.
So I've been doing this as long as I can remember. I actually have high school yearbook signatures that read like client testimonials. It's terrifying.
I got to ask though, there has to be like, I guess not has to be, but I assume there would be a situation where it's like a CW drama where you have all these powers, but you're like, no, I must learn math.
I didn't know that it was like that, but, yeah. But I do remember. So I came up in this. I was doing self-hypnosis by the time I was 10. I was reading tarot cards by the time I was 12. My mother had me in psychic development classes. I was raised on Seth and Ram Dass and Abraham Hicks and J.C. Knight and all the big names of the year of the era. And then I got married at 21 and stupid. And my husband at the time was an atheist. And so I kind of stepped away from it for, you know, 6-7 years. And then I came back in and I had a new awakening and had this whole thing where I started to see things and I started to prove to myself that I was psychic, which was oh so entertaining. I started going to this spiritualist church and I would sit in the church and they had mediumship from the pulpit in the spiritualist church. And so every time the medium would be up there giving messages, I'd be like, oh yeah. And this, and this, and this, and this in my head. Right. And so I'd catch the person at the coffee clutch after church and be like, and this, and this, and this, and this. And they're like, oh, well, that's useful. Thank you. Well, a friend of mine and I had been going out for food and I had described to him his childhood house and all this other stuff. But in my head, I was still going, I'm probably just playing the odds, right? In my head, I was going, you know, I didn't quite believe myself. And even though other people were believing me. And then one day he asked me to sit in for a class. And the class was, he's like, anything. He's like, can you do a class for 2 hours for me today? Because the person who was supposed to do it just bagged. And I was like, sure. I'm learning shiatsu. I can teach that. I ran out of things to say at an hour and a half because I was still learning it, right? So at like an hour and a half in, I had nothing left to say. And he said, well, why don't you just do readings for everybody? And I was like, I don't do that. And he's like, yeah, you do. Yeah, you do. I'm like, no, I don't. And I didn't have my cards with me or anything. You know, that's my crutch, right? I needed my crutch. And I said, and everybody was like, yeah. And I'd never seen these people before. I had nothing to go on. And so I was like, fine, I'll do it with the understanding that absolutely everything that comes out of my mouth is probably wrong. And they're like, yeah, okay. And I went around the room and I told these people things I had no right to know. And I was on point for everything. I scared the crap out of myself. I was like, what is going on? Right. I don't normally remember my readings these days because I'm channeling everything, right? But back then, because it scared me so much, I actually remember every reading I gave in detail 24 years later, right? And, you know, I'm just ridiculous things that I knew. And with such detail that you couldn't question that it was psychic, right?
Right.
I mean, I was telling people how old their kids were. I was telling them where they were going on vacation. I was telling them what was going on in their lives and what they did for a living, you know, all the things, right? And so that was my CW moment of you asked.
Right.
That was my, what do I do now, right?
Absolutely.
I divorced my husband, sold my house, sold my business, quit my nonprofit, and moved out of state to live with a bunch of people I met at the Renaissance Fair. That was my answer.
Was that part legit? Like you just said, oh, this mental health crew was dope.
Wow, I absolutely did that. I looked at my life and said, this is, I made the American dream. I had the big house, the gorgeous husband, the dog, the business that was successful. I was a pillar of my community. I had everything that you were supposed to have to be happy in life. And I looked around and went, I fucking hate my life.
Yeah.
I hate this. And I just raised it to the ground. I just leveled my life. I was just like, woof. And I effectively went off and joined the circus, according to my business partner.
Well, it sounds like you left the circus to join a family. That's what it says. Like the opposite.
Yeah, that's actually, you know what? That is a really apt description because they were my family. They became my family. They became my spiritual family. And for 4 years, we lived together and did deep spiritual work together. And that's where I learned magic. And that's where I learned ritual. And I mean, it was a super amazing space to be in. It was dysfunctional in a lot of ways too, but that's pretty much true of any place you go early in your journey. So
absolutely.
But yeah.
How, I mean, maybe this is kind of a question you really can't quantify, right? Cause it's like feelings, but how did the reawakening feel different than the first time you reconciled with your abilities?
Well, the first time I didn't really think about the reconciliation of it because I was a kid, right?
Yeah.
So it just was who I was, right? Sure. And when I came back into it, the thing that actually sparked it for me was this fundamentalist minister came to my porch with a new convert of his, knocking on the door, spreading the word of God, right? And he said, what do you believe? And I said, you don't want to know what I believe. And he's like, no, I really do. I said, well, I said, I'll tell you, but I will warn you that if I tell you, he's going to have a crisis of faith before we're done with the conversation. And he's like, let me worry about him. And I'm like, okay. And because my ex was not a big fan of religious folk, we sat on the front porch for 2 hours, over 2 hours, and just had an in-depth discussion because I speak fluent Bible because I came up through the Christian church. And so we had this in-depth discussion about, you know, mysticism and the spirit and being part of God and a different interpretation of the Bible, right? And he and I had this amazing conversation at the end of which we agreed to disagree, but at the end of which his convert was having a serious crisis of faith.
Right.
I did warn him, but it really brought me in and locked me back into my spirituality in that 2 hour conversation, because sure. I was like, I had been ignoring it because it wasn't welcome in my home. Right. And that brought me back and I was like, ah, and then everything just started to open up from there. And when things really took off when I got the divorce, because, and that would have been about a year after this conversation. And by the way, it was during my Saturn return. So for anybody who's out there who's spiritual, Saturn is the great disruptor, and it comes back to the place it was in your birth chart every 28 years.
Oh,
so we go through massive shifts. It's also the foundation of where a lot of people get their midlife crises, right? I had my quarter life crisis at 28, you know? And when I stepped into that new life after the divorce, there was this moment of just massive gratitude about everything in my life. I was like, I don't have to check in with anybody about where I want to go or what I want to eat for breakfast. And I don't have to ask him if I can spend money on something I want. And, you know, all of these little things that were big restrictions in my life had just flown open, and all of this gratitude flowed in. And as a result, my gifts just like came slamming into me. Right. And I was seeing things and understanding things and hearing things from my guides and getting guidance in every direction. I was just so on for like a year. And then the gratitude started fading because I got used to it. Right. Because that's what happens is we get used to it. And if we don't know that it needs to be a practice, we forget. Mm-hmm. And then it slowed down after that. Sure. It didn't stop, obviously, but I was still doing deep work, but I wasn't feeling that in the flow. And it may just be that it normalized for me. I say it slowed down. I'm not sure it did now that I'm looking back and talking about it. I don't think it did slow down. I think it normalized. I think I got used to it. It was no longer a surprise when I knew things about people and things like that. So
yeah.
that sort of thing.
Well, thanks so much for sharing that. I think a lot of creatives and entrepreneurs have a similar moment where they're in an environment where their gifts somehow either knock them over the head or they stumble out in the dark and they go, you know what? I need to make a jump here in my personal life or professional life to make that a possibility. So I thank you for that. You know, a lot of times we think about like what we can and can't do. Like, oh man, what could we, is it crazy? Can we share this with others? Can we have it? Why did you decide to share your gift with others as opposed to being like, oh, it's a cool party trick I can do for funsies?
I didn't really feel like I had an option, to be honest. So I had been a real estate agent when I was married, and I sort of snuck out of the spiritual closet one client at a time, right? So, you know, I had one client that I sort of made a comment about, oh, the energy in this house is not so great. And they were like, oh, what do you think about the energy? La, 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 la. I was like, oh, okay, let me tell you. This house has the energy of somebody who died. There's somebody who died in this house. We should not buy this house. This house is on a bad ley line. Let's not be here. And they were like, okay, let's pick something else. And, you know, just... it happened one client at a time as I went through. And the more people I talked to about it, I didn't have a single clunk. I didn't have a single time where I was like, oh, well, the energy, or, oh, well, you know, it feels right. Not once did they look at me and go, what are you talking about? You're nuts. Or, you know, you're going to hell. Right. And so all of that really inspired me to allow myself to be a little more out of the spiritual closet, because, you know, this was the mid to late 90s. So, you know, the spiritual world was still somewhat, you know, you were looked down on if you were part of it, right?
Put up for laughs, I guess, right? It's like a Friends Network, Miss Cleo, right?
Yeah, it was a Miss Cleo time, right? Right. And so there was a lot of people going, oh, that's just a scam, or, oh, it's a novelty, or, oh, whatever. You know, there was nobody taking it very seriously, right? And it, which was better than 20 years before that when I started studying, where, you know, if you were woo-woo, you were insane, right? Mm-hmm. You were a crackpot to be ignored, right? And so in a lot of ways, I think it's great that the world has changed and that people have opened up to the power of their own intuition and to the acceptance of the fact that they may have guides or angels or whatever. But the downside is that the marketing guys, the marketing bros, have gotten their hands on spirituality and really are fucking it up hard, because they're taking aphorisms that they do not understand and marketing them like mad, because they're great at marketing and most spiritual people suck at marketing, and they're dominating the marketplace and passing out stuff that is misinformation at best and really messed up at worst. And
you have an example just for us, my context. I'm trying to see what does a marketing bro do, or what are they behind? I mean,
so, you know, I mean, or they're just, you know, shamming, right? So like Jay Shetty just got exposed, right? Mm-hmm. He was a spiritual guru to the stars and did all kinds of stuff. And he lied about his resume in a big way. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I didn't follow him. So I don't know what his stuff was about, and I can't say whether or not it was valid because I don't follow him, but you know, it's an example of somebody who was just using the marketing. He was like, oh, I spent a couple of years as a monk, I think they said. That wasn't true. And so that's an example of a marketing bro, right? They use the trappings of what they know will sell. Mm-hmm. And then they use that, whether it's true or not, to sell their programs to people because they know people will buy them.
Right.
So, you know.
In your personal, and we'll get to your business quite a second, that's very fascinating, but what has been, when it comes to people that need more information before they make a decision, what's been the division between those who don't believe, quote unquote, or those that had believed in a previous system that let them down? Like, how much will you come across your clients or potential clients has that happened?
So are you talking about like religious trauma and stuff?
Like, let's say you're in your spirit coaching business, then maybe someone goes, ah, bah, humbug, that's a bunch of hooey, versus being someone like, oh, you know what? 5 years ago, I paid this person that I thought was a coach, but it really wasn't. I'm shell-shocked from trying it again.
So I don't typically get either of those.
Okay.
The people who think I'm a bunch of hooey don't talk to me, uh-huh. So which is fine. They're entitled to their opinion. That's fine. The people I tend to get more often are the people who went to therapy, and therapy worked for a little bit, but then it stopped working, and they felt like their therapist was trying to tell them where to go, but they could not ever get it. And the therapist is trained to not tell you the answer. They're trained to lead you to the answer. And my people just got tired of being frustrated that they couldn't figure out where the therapist was trying to lead them. And they wanted somebody to just give them the damn answer.
Right.
So, you know, I start with, here's the damn answer for all the things you didn't get in therapy. And then let's contextualize that for you and put it in concert with the spiritual work as well.
Okay. So when people do come to you, there are some, we've tried something we're looking for. Can I say next level? Is that something that's okay?
Yeah, okay. Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. I'm actually running a retreat right now. That's actually subtitled a not for beginners retreat, right?
Yeah.
So yeah. Cause I do everything from very beginner work all the way up to super advanced level work because,
talk to me about that because I've never heard a not beginner level retreat. What is that like? Super intense? Is it a physical training that you guys?
No. It's so when you get to a certain stage in your spiritual work, there is a point that you reach where it is no longer about gathering information about the world and about the spiritual world and things like that. It is about going deeper in your work on yourself and about being able to deepen your experience of how you interact with spirit, right?
Okay.
And so the not for beginners retreat is, you know, you've already got all the basic skills. You know how to control your energy field. You know how to protect it. You know how to protect your space. You know how to protect yourself. You know how to do energy clearing on yourself. You know how to do basic manifestation. You know, you know all the basics, right? You've got it down. You've done a lot of your personal growth work. Now you want to take it to the next level. There are spaces that you get to as you do this work where there's a transition that happens. So you start off doing this work because you're going away from the pain.
Yeah.
You know, you're in massive anxiety, worry, dread, self-doubt, inner and outer judgment. You're needing a foundation of self-support and courage, right? And so, you know, you start off in that place where you don't really know who you are. You don't really have an identity. You tend to be a reflection of the people around you. You have terrible boundaries. You don't always claim your space in a place. You don't own your power. You have, you know, your heart is shut down. You have a hard time receiving love. You know, you just really don't know how to love yourself or value yourself if you're not doing for someone, right? And so all of this is pain. And so people go and they try to get out of pain. Well, once you get out of pain, which is a process, and it's a process I walk people through in a year and 4 months. So
right.
4 months, I can cut their stress levels in half. And the year after that, I can give them solid in their own identity and their own energy field and their own everything. And so at the end of that, and usually about halfway through that year, they start to move away. They start to shift from moving away from what they don't want, away from the pain, and moving towards what they do, because they see how much the work they've done has gotten them. And now it's not about getting out of pain. It's about, wow, how much more could I do if I did more? Right?
Right.
How much better could I feel? How much more powerful energetically could I become? How much more integrated and authentic could I be? How much more could I bring my power and my gifts to the world if I just continued? And that's where I work with people on the Not for Beginners retreat, is that we're working at that level. And so, you know, part of it is we're doing ritual every night. Part of it is that we're doing a set, we're doing certain things, like I'm doing Kundalini awakenings, which is activating that creative center energy that sits at the base of your spine and works its way up your spine. And that gives you more energy, more inspiration, all of those things. And then we're also doing sound healings, and we're doing a cacao ceremony for sacred receiving. And
I've done those, yeah.
Yeah. And so we're doing a bunch of different things, but then I've let everybody who's coming tell me what they want to learn about. Right. And so I give them a list of options. I'm like, here are your options. What are you interested in? And they all voted. And, you know, I'm still accepting registrations, but I've got 7 people registered in the last like 3 weeks. So yeah, they're voting as they go. And whatever gets the most votes is what we'll do. And if somebody really wanted something that they didn't get because it didn't get voted on, I've got a lot of empty space in the schedule so that I can just sit and have private conversations with people if that's what they need, because it's a not for beginners retreat. It's a small retreat, max 20 people, right? Yeah, sure. So that makes it easier for me to have one-on-one time with people if they need it. And so that's what I mean by that, is that it's not a set curriculum and it's not a set program. And even if I did a beginner's retreat, honestly, I have been known to rewrite the entire last day of the retreat just because I got to the end of the day and went, this isn't what they need. What I had planned is not what they need. I'm going to rewrite it because this is what they need. And so I'll rewrite an entire day of the retreat on the, before if it's needed. So, yeah.
Well, that's always a mark of an intellectual educator, right? Understanding, like, look, this is, we have a class, not all things are one stop fits all, and let's adjust. And I did a cacao ceremony once in my life, and Hershey's ain't. I had no idea. but I'm better for it now. So I want to ask a question that may be proprietary, but I think it should be for someone that worked with other people and you are navigating trauma from others, and even yourself, if you're having a connection with your students, what do you do to recharge? Like, how do you fill your cup if you're working with trauma all the time?
Great question. And to be honest, I'm not working with trauma all the time. So what I do isn't therapy. Therapy is to get people out of their trauma. What I do is I take people who are functional and I make them happy. And so if somebody's like falling down into damsel in distress, sort of can't anything mode, then they're probably not ready for me. I need the people who are in the knight in shining armor mode. The I will save everyone. I must save the world because I can't save myself. Right? Those are my people. And so I'm not usually working with trauma. I'm working with the remnants of trauma, right? So it's the habits that came out of trauma. We create this tapestry of coping mechanisms, right? And those coping mechanisms are stuck together. And so what I do is I unravel the tapestry rather than trying to pull on a single thread like you do if you go to individual classes, right?
Right.
And that's the reason why it's so effective, is that I'm doing a lot of different pieces all at once. But honestly, I'm doing that through the coursework I've created, and then I help in the coaching. And so they do the coursework on their own, and then they turn in their assignments and ask questions and things like that. But that work is being done in their container, and then they'll ask me questions. They'll be like, oh, I have this experience or I have that experience. And you know, yeah, some of the trauma comes up. But so I'm going to ask you, you're an empath, right?
People tell me that.
Yeah. Sometimes. Yeah. I was going to say that question could not have come from anybody but an empath. Oh. So, the thing that happens is, as an empath, cause I'm an empath too, is that we have a tendency to mix our energies with the people around us. That's what makes us an empath. Mm-hmm. And I have learned how not to do that. I can still read somebody's energy, but I just send out a little tendril of energy. I just like touch into your energy field and I can feel what you're feeling. And I'm like, okay, and now I'm done. Right. I don't have to feel it ongoing. Right. I'm not needing to monitor. It's actually the empath skill is a monitoring. It's an active monitoring system to keep you safe. Right.
Right.
And so when you get to the point where you can keep yourself safe because you are no longer dependent upon the person who is probably the problem in your life, right, for living, then when you can get to that point and you can realize you're at that point, which is the hard part because most of us, our five-year-olds are running the bus, right? And so, you know, once you can take the five-year-old out of the driver's seat, and you can learn how you're holding your energy and shift the way you're holding your energy, and then you can create better boundaries. So I can know that somebody is in their trauma, and I can taste and feel that that's significant to them, but it doesn't have to run me over, right? I can just be with it. I no longer feel like I have to fix it, because we as empaths feel like we have to fix it because it's hurting us. Right?
Right.
When you don't have it hurt you, then it can be the other person's issue. and you can be support and you can be help and you can be guide without it being your problem, right? And that actually makes you a healthier healer, because now your motivation is purely for their benefit, not to make them better so you feel better, right?
Yes, I get it. I understand. Is it like a skill that you learn, level up, or is it kind of like a muscle that you have to keep training to keep that barrier?
Little of both. Okay. Yeah, great question. So I actually have a download on my website called Boundaries for Empaths, because I think every empath on the planet should have this as a freebie, because I think we all need it desperately. So if you go to my website, click on the blog button on the right-hand side, it will say Boundaries for Empaths. Just click on that. It's a free course. You can get it, right? Yeah. And you should absolutely try it, because especially since you said you're a DJ, you go into group environments, this would be super helpful. Okay.
Yeah.
Especially if you've got people who are jacked on different drugs and whatnot, it'd be super helpful, right? You know, but the, you know, so first off, it's a skill. You learn how to do it, but then you have to practice it to keep it in place until it becomes default. Okay. We learn as children to spread our energy field out to the room or the building or some people, the world. And that's how we monitor everything, right? And then over time, you have to learn to pull that energy field back in and then hold it there, which feels like losing a sense when you're an empath, because you're like, I can't read everybody anymore. How do I know what's going to happen? Right? It's freaking out. And what you have to learn is that you don't have to monitor everybody all the time. You can simply make an intention that if there's a problem to be had, that there the problem be noticed, that you know, right? Mm-hmm. That you don't have to be letting other people into your energy field all the time. But it takes a good 6-8 weeks of constant practice of pulling it in to get it to go back to a solid place for yourself. But yeah, when it does, you feel safer, you feel less anxious, you feel more solid.
Yeah.
And more, you can do focus better because you don't have 50 people's energy in your field, right?
Right.
And you can be more effective in the world. So all of these things are reasons to do that. And so, you know, is it worth the effort of looking at it 6-8 times a day for 6 weeks or 8 weeks? Yeah. In the long run, absolutely. I remember the day that I realized that someone had entered the room behind me and I didn't notice.
Oh.
Right? Yeah, because the hypervigilance had gone. Right. And hypervigilance is a trauma response.
Okay.
Right? Being able to drop the trauma response is it's proof of healing. Right? So, and that's because I was doing this process.
It's like a bunny, right? Just always looking around, making sure, right, nibbling those carrots, everything's all fine.
That's a great way to look at this, because bunnies are prey, mm-hmm, and prey are victims.
Wow.
And when you're standing in that energy, you're being in a victim energy. And when you're in a victim energy, that's what you will attract to you, is more victim energy. More, you will attract to you people who will victimize you, because you are already standing in that energy. You're expecting something to go wrong. And therefore, you will draw that to you. What you focus on expands. What you resonate with, you will draw to you.
Wow.
Right? And so these are core level assumptions we make in our lives that we don't think about. But they're the things that create our reality, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, just because you describe my life, doesn't it? No, I'm just kidding. I tell you, it's a good point. And that's something that...
Don't make me spit take my water.
Yes. I love it myself just there. No, I get it. I totally understand. Before you went live, you had mentioned that you are in the process of updating your book. And I want to ask more about that and what we decided to make it fresher for new audiences. Tell me more about it.
Yeah. So my book, I mostly did was update my links and because I've changed my program titles and stuff. But the book title was way too long, but it was called The Overachiever's Guide to Nailing Your Spiritual Growth in Record Time, a book that needs a shorter title, right? And so I'm just changing it to The Overachiever's Guide to Spiritual Awakening. But the book itself is, it's a 30,000 foot overview, because the biggest challenge is that there is no curriculum in the spiritual world. There's no published curriculum that people say, okay, well, you do this, and then you do that, and then you do that, and then you'll get there, right? everywhere you go, they have their own path that they teach, and that uses different words from all the other paths that they teach. And you're just like, how do I know what's going on? And some, you know, the paths are very narrow in a lot of cases. And so what the book was designed to do was to write the curriculum for spiritual evolution, right? Yeah. For spiritual awakening. And so I cover things like, what are the common wounds? I did 3,000 energy reviews for people who were on a spiritual path. And I spent, that was 30,000 hours because each one's like an hour. And so I spent like 30,000 hours over the course of 5 years doing all of these reviews. And I found that there were 38 common wounds that people had. And so I wrote an entire chapter on all those different wounds and what the source of them is and what they are about and how they relate to other things. And so that's laid out. And then I did one on spiritual traps and one on what to expect as you walk through the journey and what the stages of evolution are and what the transition points are for getting from one stage to the next. And so I tried to, my goal with the book was to make it for the, all my people are like knowledge seekers. They just suck in knowledge. They want as much knowledge as they possibly can have. And what this book does is it provides the framework for you to understand how spiritual evolution works and then use that for your own purposes to do your own work, right? So, and if you get stuck, you can go back to the book and be like, oh, I'm at this stage and this is what I need to do. I don't want to do that.
Right.
Like, okay. But now you know why you're stuck. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Right? Yeah. It's
like, just tell me the answers. I don't like let you learn. Oh, you know, like, and the book is available now. If you can, totally.
Yeah. The book is available on Amazon right now under the old title, The Overachiever's Guide to Nailing Your Spiritual Growth in Record Time. It'll be released again in a printable format as soon as I can finish going back and forth with the editors, because that's been a month and a half long process so far. So
yeah,
I was like, I thought it'd be out by now, but not so much. So soon, hopefully by the end of April.
It definitely is like a cool resource. I think and I'm being completely honest with myself, because this show is all about being honest. I kind of shot out the line. You know what I mean? Like I'm seeing someone who's more into that. Like I think I escorted her to a Abraham Hicks show. You know, I get one a show experience. I'm not sure what they call it. It was no pyrotechnics. You know what I mean? It wasn't like a parade or anything.
Esther would not mind. Nor would Abraham. Right. Abraham would definitely call it a show. I've been listening to him since I was 10. He would definitely call it a show.
Yeah, I guess you can get your money's worth. But I'm also like, not to be a stereotypical about it, but I'm a guy from Brooklyn. You know what I mean? Like, we don't really like, we'll say things that there's like a Rosetta Stone translation. Like, yo, I went in there and the vibe was off. But we don't really talk about spiritual empathy in that way. So it's kind of cool to hear it from your perspective.
Yeah. Well, and this is why I have my podcast, is so that people can listen to me when they're in that state and be like, well, I'm not going to admit I'm listening to this, but fuck it. We'll listen to this. And this girl cusses. She might know something, right? So,
what's the name of the podcast? Let me know. So
it's called Spirit Sherpa. So yeah, there's going to be a new podcast coming out soon called Spirit Guides, but this one is up and running, and it's been running for 6 years. So there are 360 episodes or something. So we've done it weekly. Yeah, we've done it weekly for 6 years. So
84% of all podcasts ends at episode 8. So congratulations. Yeah.
The secret to that is having a good co-host. So because then you got somebody you have to show up for, right?
Are you gonna show this week? Oh, okay.
Yeah, I've got to be there. I'll be there. Fine.
Yeah. On New Amsterdam Radio, we kind of ask all our guests these kind of lightning round type questions. You down to play?
I'm down.
Yeah. Do you consider yourself self-made? Why or why not?
Yes and no. So yes, because I have kicked ass and took names for 20 years. And even when I wanted to quit, I didn't. And even when I had no help, I made help for myself. And then no, because I wouldn't know any of the stuff I know if I hadn't learned it from somebody else. Right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, all of this, not everything that I learned from somebody else, a lot of it I channeled, but I wouldn't have been able to channel it had I not learned how to do that from somebody else. Right. Sure. So, you know, nobody can do anything by themselves. Right. And I've had a lot of partners along the way, and I've had a lot of help along the way, and I've had a lot of pitfalls along the way too. So
sure.
Yes.
So the official answer is yes and no.
Yes and no.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's an open-ended question, by the way. I've heard so many people like rationalize either one. So you're the only one to say that. No judgments here.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. What's one of the coolest things a supporter has ever done for you?
Huh. So I would say right now I have a student who tracked me down for like a year and a half. So it's a funny story. I'm actually going to start back a little earlier than that because he tried to come into my Welcome to the Woo program, which is my first program in the series. And he was still actively in an addiction. And I was like, you're not safe. I can't put you in the group with other people. Mm-hmm. I won't take your money. I said, you need to go and do X, Y, and Z. And when you get to this stage, then you can come back and see me and I'd be happy to put you in. But right now you're not safe. And that triggered him to go and actually do the rest of the work, which honestly, I wasn't sure it was ever going to happen. My husband's been in recovery for 17 years. So I've been in the recovery community for a long time. I know a lot of people just don't do it. So I wasn't sure whether I'd ever see him again or not. He showed back up 3 months later, having done everything I asked of him. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, well, flash forward 2 years and he's finished the program. And now he is coming to me going, I want to teach this. You have to let me teach it. And I'm like, I don't do that right now. And I've already got a coach who's doing that for me and, you know, whatever. And in the interim, the coach quits. Oh. And he's working with me. He's like, I want to take this into different places, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, we could talk about it. But I was in the middle of a bunch of other stuff. And I'm like, yeah, okay. So I talked to him and then he'd go off and do his thing. And I'd talk to him and go off. But he just kept at me for like a year saying, you have to let me teach this. And finally I was just like, okay, I'm going to teach people how to teach my program. And I set up a system and he was the first person in the door. And I was like, okay, what do you need? And he's like, I need this. And I'm like, okay. And so I would put together, I mined my hard drive because I've been doing this for 25 years. And I'm like, okay, I got a ton of stuff on my hard drive. And I put it all together into a format and got it all written up and got it going and turned it into a spiritual coach certification program. And I partner with the coaches and the whole nine yards. But he was the driving force to make that happen. And that actually became, I've had this vision. So in 1999, I had a spiritual store and I was writing a business plan to get a loan for the spiritual store. And I was asking for $20,000. And the guy who was helping us write the business plan asked me, if you had $400,000 today, what would you do with it? And I said, I would start a spiritual university. Mm-hmm. And that was the birth of the idea. Right. And I tried to do it in 2013 and the world just wasn't ready for it. I wasn't ready for it. I wasn't ready to be that visible yet. And then this spiritual coach certification program came up and I'm seeing it evolve into the vision that I had, which is, you know, kind of like Hogwarts, but right. You know, honestly, it's more like Camartage if you're a Marvel comics person from Doctor Strange, right? Mm-hmm. The mystery school from Doctor Strange is really more accurate than Hogwarts. But the people who are coming into this spiritual coach certification program know that that's what I'm building. And they're all coming in with their own unique experiences and their own unique skills. And so they're learning how to teach my programs because they're sort of the foundation that you need to understand before you can do the more advanced level work.
Right.
And then they're going to be bringing forth their own work into the world and putting it underneath the Spirit Guides Mystery School brand. And so I'm super excited. And so he created the pathway for the vision to come true. And he's now the co-host of my podcast too. So
It's crazy because it's like, it's almost intentional and inadvertent at the same time.
Right. Exactly. Like, right.
That's pretty
this
surreal.
Is how it works when you let the universe help you.
Yeah. Right? Do you collect something? And if so, what do you collect?
Friends.
That's cool.
Yeah. I don't have things. We moved to Panama 2 years ago and we actually got rid of everything we owned except for six suitcases and the dog. So, even before that, I wasn't really a collector except maybe in original artwork. I like original artwork from unknown artists. just the people I like, and I like to support them. So, yeah. Which we sadly have not done since we got here, because I haven't seen a single piece of artwork that I've liked since I've arrived. But, you know, we're hoping to go to Panama City here and sometime in the future, and hopefully we can find something there. But, yeah, that's, I curate friends.
Yeah.
And I do curate them. And it's so funny because I'll get a group of friends together for a party and they're all from different circles, because I am like the queen of networking. Like I am the super connector, right? I walked in when we moved to Richmond, Virginia. When we first got there, I was doing 3 networking events a week. Wow. Because I just needed to know people, right? I was and I was doing spiritual events in the evenings and the weekends. And so I was always out. That's just who I am. I like to go stitch into a new community. My mother was military. My ex-husband was military. I learned if you don't do it fast and you don't make friends fast, you don't have time to have them before you move again, right? So. Making new friends is my superpower. And so, but I bring them all together and they all look at me and they're like, there isn't a person in this room I don't want to be friends with for the rest of my life. And I'm like, yeah, that's because nobody gets an invitation unless they're that person. Right.
Right.
Yeah. Cause I meet so many people that I can curate it that way.
Oh yeah.
And so, yeah. So I collect people. I collect friends.
And lastly, the most difficult question that we ask everyone, what's your favorite junk food? Tell me.
Oh, my favorite junk food. Oh yeah. That's a tough one. Probably Skittles right now. Although I just pulled a crown out with it, so I'm probably not going to eat them as much. I've recently started, there was a recipe I found on TikTok that is a high protein cookie dough.
Oh.
And I love cookie dough. And so the recipe, for those who want it, is 1/4 cup of Greek yogurt, 1 tablespoon of almond flour, 1 tablespoon of honey, 2 tablespoons of peanut butter, a scoop of vanilla protein powder or peanut butter protein powder if you want it to be peanut butter flavored. And then I like the Hershey's mini chips that are semi-sweet.
Yeah.
If you want to bake it, you have to add 1 teaspoon of baking soda. But I don't bake it, so I don't add that. And it makes enough for 2 people to have a really nice serving of cookie dough, and it's super high protein. And so that's been my go-to dessert for the last 2 months. So
I feel like if you make your own junk food, you deserve as much as you want, like that. Well,
that's kind of my thought. I've been making double batches recently, but it is too much to eat double batch of, you know. Yeah, it's too much to eat the whole thing yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
I get kind of overdone, but yeah,
I'll try it out. Don't worry.
He's like, nope, it'll be enough for me. It'll be fine. Yeah, you're younger than I am. We can do that. It's fine.
Child's accepted.
Right. You'll have to let me know.
Right. Kelly, it's been a lot of fun having you on the show, and I appreciate your perspective, and I appreciate you being patient with my level 1 questions. If someone wants to interact with you or book you for something, how'd they go about doing that?
KellySparta.com. is my website, and you can get to pretty much everything I have from there. If you're interested in the Spiritual Coach Certification Program, that's at spiritualcoachcertification.us. And then, of course, my podcast at spiritsherpapodcast.com or Spirit Sherpa on any podcast player.
Yeah. And the book as well. The book is available now on Amazon.
And the book. The book is available on Amazon. Yeah. I mean, I'm everywhere. You Google my name, you will not miss it. Just make sure you spell Kelly right. It's K-E-L-L-E. Yeah. And then you'll be fine.
I will be honest with you. It took me 15 years to make page 1 on Google, but when I did, I put it everywhere. I gloated to everyone who wants to hear. Take that, Flowbot. I made it. This is New Hampshire Radio, the podcast for creatives. Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks so much for listening to New Amsterdam Radio. Learn more about the show at newamsterdam.com. That's KNEW amsterdam.com. Until next time, this city is yours.